A young man steals pears from a neighbor's tree, not because he's hungry, not because the fruit is particularly delicious, but simply for the thrill of doing wrong. He doesn't even eat them. He throws them to pigs. This seemingly trivial incident, confessed by a 4th-century North African bishop, cuts to the core of human nature with surgical precision. Why do we sometimes choose wrongdoing for its own sake? Why does rebellion itself hold a perverse attraction? These questions, posed over 16 centuries ago in what became Western civilization's first spiritual autobiography, remain as urgent today as when Augustine first penned them. His Confessions, written around 397 to 398 CE, isn't merely a historical document. It's a mirror held up to the human soul, reflecting our contradictions, our longings, and our capacity for transformation. Born in 354 CE to a pagan father and Christian mother in North Africa, Augustine's early years read like a cautionary tale. Brilliant but arrogant, passionate but undisciplined, he pursued pleasure, ambition, and intellectual recognition with equal fervor. A long-term relationship with a woman he couldn't marry due to social status produced a son, Adeodatus. Meanwhile, his restless mind embraced maniacism, a dualistic philosophy that viewed good and evil as equal cosmic forces locked in eternal battle. His intellectual journey took him from Carthage to Rome and finally Milan, where he encountered Bishop Ambrose. Through Ambrose's sophisticated preaching, Augustine began to see depths in the Christian faith he dismissed as intellectually shallow. Simultaneously, Neoplatonic philosophy helped him conceive of God as spiritual rather than physical, a crucial breakthrough for his materialist mindset. The turning point came in a Milan garden, where Augustine wrestled with his inability to commit fully to the Christian path. Hearing a child's voice chanting, "Take it and read," he opened the Bible randomly to Paul's words, "Not in reveling and drunkenness, not in lust and wantonness, not in quarrels and rivalries." In that moment, everything shifted. Light flooded in. Doubt vanished. This dramatic conversion led to baptism, ordination, and eventually becoming Bishop of Hippo, where he would write works that fundamentally shaped Western thought. His journey demonstrates that transformation remains possible regardless of how far we've wandered. You have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our hearts are restless until they rest in you. This opening line captures something essential about human existence, the persistent sense that nothing quite satisfies, that every achievement leaves us wanting more. Augustine explored this restlessness through his own life. In Carthage, he excelled in rhetoric and gained fame, yet success brought only temporary satisfaction. Passionate love affairs left him starving for something more substantial. Even friendship proved insufficient when his childhood friend died suddenly. "My heart was utterly darkened by this sorrow," he writes, "and everywhere I looked, I saw death." Augustine argues that our desires for beauty, truth, and goodness are actually displaced desires for God, who is the source of all these things. When we seek fulfillment in created things rather than the Creator, disappointment inevitably follows. The musician seeking perfect harmony, the philosopher pursuing absolute truth, the lover yearning for complete union, each points towards something beyond itself. This restlessness manifests at spiritual homesickness, where exiles longing for our true country, pulled by a gravity we can't quite name. "You were within me, but I was outside myself," Augustine laments. This universal longing is itself evidence of our divine origin and destination. Augustine's exploration of memory and time reveals psychological insights 15 centuries ahead of their time. Memory, he observes, is a vast palace containing sensory impressions, concepts, and emotions. "Great is the power of memory," he writes, "a profound and immeasurable multiplicity, and this is mind, this is I myself." When recalling childhood, he becomes both the child he was and the adult he is. Memory unifies our fragmented existence across time. His analysis of time is equally penetrating. "What, then, is time?" he asks. "If no one asks me, I know. If I want to explain it to someone who does ask me, I don't know." The past exists only as present memory, the future as present expectation, and the present as a vanishing point between them, an insight anticipating phenomenology by 1,500 years. Augustine's observations about the divided will remain startlingly relevant. The mind commands the body and is instantly obeyed. The mind commands itself and meets resistance. When we scroll social media despite intending to work, or eat poorly despite knowing better, we experience this internal division, simultaneously desiring change yet resisting it, creating the peculiar human experience of being at war with ourselves. Augustine's greatest intellectual struggle was reconciling God's goodness with evil's existence. As a Manichaean, he'd accepted dualism, good and evil, as equal opposing forces. But this framework collapsed, leading to a revolutionary insight. Evil is not a substance, but a privation, the absence of good. I inquired what wickedness was, Augustine writes, and I did not find a substance, but a perversion of will twisted away from the highest substance, you, O God. This transformed Western thought. Evil has no independent existence. It's parasitic on good, like a wound existing only as damage to healthy flesh. If evil is choice rather than substance, moral responsibility becomes central. God grants genuine freedom, which includes the possibility of choosing wrongly. The pear theft becomes his case study, stealing what he didn't need simply because I loved my own undoing. Augustine's framework preserves both divine goodness and human responsibility, offering one of philosophy's most influential solutions to the problem of evil. At the heart of Augustine's theology lies divine grace, God's unmerited favor that transforms the human heart. What do you have that you did not receive? He asks. His conversion illustrates this principle. Despite his mother Monica's prayers, Augustine resisted for years until providential encounters with Ambrose, Neoplatonic texts, a child's voice saying, "Take it and read," changed everything. "Late have I loved you," he writes, "beauty so ancient and so new. And behold, you were within me, and I sought you outside myself." God was pursuing him long before he began pursuing God. This emphasis on divine initiative challenged both pagan self-reliance and heresies emphasizing human moral capacity. Our very desire for God is itself God's gift. The Confessions embodies this theology by publicly acknowledging his sins and God's mercy. "I want to act in truth, making my confession both in my heart before you and in this book before many witnesses." In our achievement-oriented culture, Augustine's message offers liberation. We are loved not for our accomplishments, but despite our failures. Augustine's Confessions endures because it captures our capacity to desire happiness, yet sabotage it, to know right, yet do wrong, to seek meaning amid transience. His unflinching honesty about contradiction creates a mirror in which readers across 16 centuries recognize themselves. "I have become a question to myself," he writes, a statement resonating in our age of identity exploration. His integration of intellectual rigor with emotional vulnerability offers a model for authentic self-examination that neither wallows in feelings nor hides behind abstractions. His influence extends beyond theology. His analysis of memory and time shaped phenomenologists like Husserl and Heidegger. His exploration of desire anticipated psychoanalytic insights. Even secular readers find in Augustine a kindred spirit who takes seriously the human quest for meaning. The Confession's most profound legacy may be demonstrating that intellectual depth and spiritual passion need not oppose each other. Augustine shows that reason and love can work together seeking truth. In our fragmented age, when intellectual discourse often seems divorced from lived experience, his example becomes invaluable. He reminds us that the most important questions, "Who am I? What should I love? Where can I find happiness?" require both rigorous thinking and personal commitment. His work continues speaking across centuries because it addresses perennial human concerns with philosophical sophistication and emotional authenticity rarely matched in Western literature. Augustine's Confessions ends not with triumph, but with ongoing prayer, a recognition that the spiritual journey continues throughout life. "You called, you shouted, and you broke through my deafness," he writes. "You flashed, you shone, and you dispelled my blindness. You breathed your fragrance on me. I drew in breath, and now I pant for you. I have tasted you, now I hunger and thirst for more." This poetic awakening speaks to anyone longing for something beyond the material world. The genius of the Confessions lies in its dual nature, intensely personal, yet universally relevant. Augustine searched everywhere except within himself, a pattern familiar to those who seek fulfillment in external achievements, possessions, or relationships, only to find them insufficient. That ache when success rings hollow, when pleasure fades, Augustine knew it intimately. His journey suggests the peace we're chasing isn't found in acquiring more, but in aligning ourselves with our deepest purpose. The question isn't whether you'll continue searching, you will. The question is whether you'll keep looking outside yourself or finally turn inward to find what's been waiting all along.